Hi, I'm Hannah Baba, host of Cross Currents. We are 70% listener-supported radio, and just a few times a year, we ask for your support. Now is the time to do that. It's our membership campaign. And for me, one of the things I love about KALW is how it connects me to the world through programming from the BBC, the CBC, and other international stations. If you feel the same, if you feel that connection, make your contribution today. It's easy. Go to KALW.org, click donate. Thank you.
KALW.
So I think that there's not a lot of civil rights involved in this bill.
San Francisco voters just passed the mayor's controversial drug screening policy, known as Prop F.
Prop F legal language was pretty vague, and I can't even give people guidance.
Today we hear how it will work, what we know and what we don't. Then we ask a DJ about music discovery and creating sets in an era of AI.
As a DJ, it's more on us to find artists that wouldn't be in these algorithms or that wouldn't be being systematically like machine driven through these playlists, because playlists are like what's running a lot of the music industry.
A chat with KALW DJ Marcus Rosario. I'm Hannah Baba, and this is Cross Currents. Last fall, San Francisco Mayor London Breed proposed a plan to compel adults enrolled in the County Adult Assistance Program, known as CAP, to be screened for drug dependencies before they get any cash benefits.
No more handouts without accountability. So in order to get resources from our city, you will need to be in a substance use disorder program and consistently seeking treatment.
Last week, city residents approved Breed's plan by voting to pass Prop F. But how will this program work? Is drug screening the same as drug testing? And does the city have the capacity to provide treatment? To bring you some answers, we're airing an excerpt from a KALW town hall. It was recorded live at our space in downtown San Francisco at 220 Montgomery. This discussion on Prop F's passage was moderated by the San Francisco Public Press executive director and publisher, Lila LaHood. She spoke with Nuala Bisheri, columnist at the San Francisco Chronicle, and Shannon Knox, the executive director at the San Francisco Drug Users Union. Lila began by asking Nuala, how many people currently enrolled in assistance programs would be impacted by the screenings?
The County Adult Assistance Program, which is often called CAP, has about 5,200 people who are receiving funds. These are people who are really low income, and they benefits range from about $109 a month for people who are homeless to $712 for people who are housed, 30% of which is automatically deducted for rent. So it's a fairly small amount of funds that we are talking about, and 5,000 people isn't that many either. As to how many of those 5,000 people would have a substance use disorder and be impacted by a Prop F, it's unclear. I've heard a few different numbers. I think the Human Services Agency said maybe 1,000 people or so had self-reported that they had substance use disorder, though there's currently no way for the Human Services Agency to connect those people to treatment right now. And then there's some other numbers that they have thrown out in one year where there were 700 overdoses. 13% of them were active or former CAP recipients. So that's just kind of looking overall at some of the numbers that the Human Services Agency has been throwing out. But it was a ballot measure that it's designed to serve or affect a very, very small number of people in reality.
Okay. Shannon, I wanted to ask you, so we're talking about a small number of people, but for each of those individuals, this does matter. Can you talk about, you know, what does this policy mean for individual recipients of benefits, and what will they be going through because of these policy changes?
Well, I don't think it will result in anything good for people who receive these benefits. As far as I see, people are going to be screened for drugs. And I don't even understand how the screening process will work. The Prop F legal language was pretty vague. A lot of it was completely vague, and I can't even give people guidance. But if people are screened for drug use and they determine to enter the treatment program, which would protect them under the ADA to keep receiving their benefits, then they would be coerced basically into a treatment program, which we can see where people enter treatment that don't want it are much more likely to die of an overdose following any period of abstinence, especially people leaving incarceration, up to 120 times as likely to die of overdose, one study in Massachusetts found. So there's the option of accepting treatment to keep your benefits, which will increase your likelihood of dying of an overdose should you start using drugs again. And then also, if you lose your benefits due to not accepting this treatment, then you are basically going to be losing your housing, and you're going to be losing your assistance, and then you'll be basically what SB 43 describes as gravely disabled and eligible for a state conservatorship. So if you're not protected under the ADA's description of disabled by being involved in a treatment program as a person who's addicted to drugs, then you are gravely disabled under the state conservatorship law and be coerced into treatment through a mandated conservatorship. So I think that there's not a lot of civil rights involved in, this bill.
So in terms of the screening, and Nuala, you and I had a conversation recently about this. Didn't you say that the screening typically happens over the phone? Can you talk a little bit about that and what you know about how the screening process happens for county assistants?
Yeah, so for county assistants, there's a couple existing qualifiers. So in order to receive it, you have to live in San Francisco, and you have to be able to work 12 hours a month. And so that as the application process works, you can either call in, which was a policy that was created during COVID and now continues. So you can have a phone call, initial assessment, or you can go into the Human Services Agency and be assessed in person for those two things. So when you think about adding in a screening for people with substance use disorder, things start getting a little tricky. And Human Services Agency staff that I talked to for stories I wrote about it were like, we are not qualified to do this. You know, we are a benefits agency. We are not a public health agency. How on earth are we going to know whether someone has a substance use disorder problem, especially over the phone? And so I have a very, very difficult thing to do. And I also know, you know, a lot of people who use drugs are pretty good at hiding their drug use. So I think there's a lot of people who, you know, can sneak by this. But it's a pretty broken system, I think, from the outset. There was a report that came out in the Chronicle recently that said, where's my numbers on it? It was something like out of 718 people who were arrested during 1 year and cited for drugs, 41 of those lived out of the county but were receiving local cash assistance. So the system is already not working to screen people properly, right? If the basis is that you have to live in San Francisco and they're letting people fall through the cracks with that, I don't expect them to necessarily do a better job when it comes to substance use treatment. But aside of the potential ineffectiveness of this, I think it does raise a lot of problems. I can see racism playing out really badly here. I can see people avoiding applying altogether. I think as rumors spread, people could get really scared of going to the office that, you know, people might think it's testing, not screening. And that can be a really scary thing. There are legal implications for that. And so I think this is going to have a pretty large impact on the number of people who are applying. But if they do apply, I don't trust the system as it is right now to actually assess them correctly.
And when you say, and actually, I think this is a good thing to clarify, when you say testing versus screening, you're just, it's about asking people, are you using drugs?
Did I use the word testing?
No, you did not. Okay. I'm actually, because yeah. I think these terms get used interchangeably.
So the proposal in the ballot measure is just about screening. It's not about testing. And there's been a lot of confusion around that. And the words that are used in the measure are reasonable suspicion. Anyone who is reasonably, there's a reasonable suspicion that they have a substance use disorder. And so...
Science.
Yeah. Science. It's really difficult. I can talk about treatment, too, if you want.
Yeah, actually, and I'd love to hear from both of you on this about capacity. And this, if people are screened and they say, actually, I do want help, does the city have the capacity to provide treatment?
No.
Shannon, tell us a little bit more about this. What is it, you know, what do you know about the city's current capacity to offer treatment to people who are asking for it?
Well, I'd like to know the city's current capacity to understand what type of treatment people might need mm-hmm. in the first place, because there's, yeah, I mean, what, you go through all this trauma of being, like, unhoused on the street, receiving GA benefits, being poor, like, maybe losing your teeth, having hygiene problems, right? And, like, treatment first out the gate is going to be having people quit substances in this really hard way, taking away their basically their self-medication to deal with their trauma. What, I mean, there's no capacity, but to get back to what you asked, like, there's not adequate treatment for people who are seeking it at this point. So I don't understand how there would be adequate treatment for people who are coerced into receiving it. A lot of the treatment programs that are offered are not sufficient whatsoever to help someone with a substance use disorder, such as an addiction to fentanyl. It's a huge leap to go from being addicted to fentanyl to being in recovery. And most people don't even believe it's possible because care courts, all that stuff, like 2 weeks or some shit like that, sorry, but 2 weeks or something like that, like, is not even nearly sufficient. Like, even a 90-day program isn't sufficient. People need all kinds of care to recover from what's going on. What happens in the street, women get raped all the time. You know, people are arrested, put through the systems, can't get a job anywhere, so I don't know what the taking away the GA is, but to be, no, there's not sufficient resources whatsoever, and there's not sufficient understanding about what it would need to take to help people enter treatment, as it were, described here.
That was Shannon Knox, executive director of the San Francisco Drug Users Union, Nuala Bisheri, columnist at the San Francisco Chronicle, and Lila LaHood, executive director of the San Francisco Public Press. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Henat Baba. You may hear music programmer DJ Marcus Rosario on the air on weekends here at KALW. Every Saturday and Sunday, he hosts his music show, where he curates playlists that air from 12 to 2 p.m. DJ Marcus got his first turntables when he was 15, and he grew up listening to radio, KCRW in Southern California. Today, his mixes are globally inspired, and he always makes sure to include a dance set. I spoke to DJ Marcus, and we talked about this new era of AI music curation, how it's affecting his job and the current music scene.
I still remember as a kid waking up in the morning and my parents would be listening to NPR, just listening to the radio and then hearing these people play music and just kind of like, what are they doing? Like, what is that? Whoa, this is cool. So it's kind of I would say an evolution of sorts from hearing it in the car to getting my own radio and then like getting to switch the dial. And it just became a process after a while. And I just became kind of like obsessed with it.
You are listening to Marcus Rosario on KALW San Francisco Bay Area.
You have like your Bay Area audience here, which is the KALW audience, but you also have like the global audience. And I'm wondering, when you're curating, when you're making these sets, do you think in terms of what music you're choosing, do you think about them differently?
I do believe that the Bay Area is a very open-minded place. So they're interested to hearing like, oh, this is cool. Because I think it comes back to like being on KALW and public radio. It's like we are like serving our listeners in an educational way. So playing music that they typically wouldn't hear is kind of like exposing them to new things. You can talk about it. Like, there might be a story behind the music that I'm playing that I might want to explore and bring up or something like that. So wherever they're listening, I think music connects us all. So it's kind of cool in that way.
And I want to ask you about this thing, because I know you have an opinion on human curation versus the algorithm.
And so for me, you know, just my own experience when I'm on a Spotify, for example, right? Yeah, I want to hear the music that I kind of know and love, you know? But when the algorithm is like, okay, since you like this, then you'll like this, and then you'll like this, and then you'll like this, and then I end up listening to the same kind of music and nothing new and nothing different.
It's hard to fight algorithms, but I do feel like they are homogenizing culture just because it's making it easier for people to like discover music without really thinking. So as a DJ, it's more on us to find artists that wouldn't be in these algorithms or that wouldn't be being systematically like machine driven through these playlists, because playlists are like what's running a lot of the music industry. A lot of my DJ heroes, they're known for playing sets of just music where they go all over the place. They go from like one genre to the next, or like one country to another that you wouldn't think connects. And I think that's important, I think, because it's like very much like not an algorithm. I think with humans making mistakes and humans kind of messing up, I think it's important that we do that too, I feel. So I think algorithms just make everything a lot more, I think, boring in some ways.
K-A-L-W.
And especially, I was at like an event the other day, and the whole idea of being live with a DJ and that DJ reading the room and seeing like what works, what music the people are connecting to. How's an algorithm gonna do that, right?
If you're studying a genre of music, if you wanna learn more about who was there, if you wanna get like really into, for instance, like the whole Blue Note catalog, I think there is a benefit for algorithms and just algorithm-centered playlists.
Because they're not going anywhere. I mean, we're having these conversations all over in journalism and podcasting, and it's like, it's not going anywhere, so how can we at least benefit from it?
I would say that they're more like a tool. I think use it as a tool to like figure out like what it is you like about it and what it is you don't, I think, and then move on and kind of use it as something to help you find other stuff in a more human-centered way.
You're listening to KALW 91.7 FM and worldwide at KALW.org. Welcome. Happy Sunday. I'm Marcus Rosario, and I'll be with you until the 2 o'clock hour, coming to you live and direct from 25th Street Recordings in Oakland, California. Happy to be here with you.
It has come back, the return of the record store and vinyl. My 17-year-old loves vinyl and just loves going to Rasputin or Amoeba. And it's like, okay, you know, this thing is coming back. This generation is starting to maybe reject a little bit of that algorithm. Do you see that changing back?
Yeah, I do. I think I definitely agree that vinyl has been like, a lot of DJ friends will still bring bags of records to gigs because their laptop might die in the middle of their set or something like that, or their USBs are not working or whatever. So I think vinyl is never going to go away in some ways, no matter how technology looks with music and entertainment. I think there's some analog factor that will still kind of be necessary.
K-A-L-W.
DJ Marcus, what song do you want to take us out with? I know part of a DJ's job is to kind of match the vibe. So what song should take us out?
One of the songs from the New Mildlife, they're like a disco band from Australia. They make like long, like 10-minute like live disco songs, very spacey. Probably be like the song Yourself.
Tiptoeing around, can't quite meet you in the middle.
That's KALW music programmer DJ Marcus Rosario. You can hear him live Saturdays and Sundays from 12 to 2 p.m. right here on KALW.
This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Before we go, we'll hear a reading from San Rafael author Maxine Rose Schur on how our hidden talents can be revealed to us by others. It's our pocket-sized book tour, New Arrivals.
It's about the very worst baker in the world, Mr. Bumblecrumb, and his wife, who is the very worst seamstress in the world. These two darling people are very kind and loving, but they just can't make a living. Through a lot of wild and comic actions, they finally discover that when they try each other's trade, they succeed. So now I'd like to read one of my favorite parts of the book, which is at the very, very end. It's a little poem. Here we go. This story wasn't meant to teach, to give a moral, or to preach, but there's a secret, and it's true. It's one I want to tell. Just you. Beneath your thoughts and in your heart lie secret talents and hidden art. Try your hand at something new. Discover things that you can do. They're hiding right inside of you. Things you never knew you knew.
That was San Rafael author Maxine Rose Schur. Her book is A Tale of Bread and Thread. It came out in December. New Arrivals is produced by Lisa Morehouse. You can find that episode and more at kalw.org/newarrivals. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.